Hey everyone, this is Michael Bell, Zan from Super Friends, Bruce Banner from The Incredible Hulk, and of course, Plastic Man. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Wonder Twin powers activate, form of a comic book.
Greetings, all you guys and gals, you glorious gathering of geeks. I'm feeling especially alliterative today. Must be all that Stan Lee prose I've been reading on Marvel Unlimited. Hey, welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your fellow geek in arms, Joe Stuber, coming at you, as I do each and every week, from the Comic Book Central lair. Thanks so much for hanging out with me today. And I think we may have a few new folks joining us this week. As some of you know, if you like the show on Facebook or you follow it on Twitter, I posted this last week. We got a shout out on a recent episode of the podcast Hollywood Babble On. That's right. That's the one that's hosted by film director Kevin Smith. We know him from Clerks, Chasing Amy, Mallrats, a bunch of other movies, and actor comedian Ralph Garman. Now, Ralph, you might recognize if you are a fan of Marvel's Agent Carter. They've got those Captain America radio shows. He's the radio announcer on Marvel's Agent Carter, so you see him on there. A few episodes back on Comic Book Central, this very podcast, I interviewed the great Van Williams. Van played the Green Hornet back in the 60s, and Ralph and Kevin Smith wrote a recent six-issue comic book series for DC Comics called Batman 66 Meets the Green Hornet. Of course, on the Comic Book Central interview, I talked to Van about that. He had those issues there. Van gave us his review of those comic books. He loved them. And Ralph and Kevin gave a nice shout out on the show. They played a clip from the show. They mentioned the website, comicbookcentral.net. That was very nice of them. And a bunch of you let me know on Facebook as well that you subscribed to the show, you joined the show this week, you've been going through reviewing some of the past episodes because you heard it on that podcast. So a big welcome to all our new listeners. I hope if you're out there, you're subscribing to the show on iTunes, check out those past episodes. Big thanks to Ralph and Kevin for the mention. That was very nice to hear. I've got a couple of episodes for you guys as well. If you want to join me here in the lair, just say you're more than welcome to come on. Always welcome on Comic Book Central. And thanks to listener Mariana Santangelo, friend of the show, for giving me a heads up on that episode. You know, when you're putting together a podcast like Comic Book Central, I'm booking, I'm recording, I'm writing, I'm editing the show, so I do get behind in a lot of the podcasts that I want to listen to, unfortunately. But it's nice to know that I got Comic Book Central Nation out there with their ears to all these podcasts, letting me know if there's a mention, so thank you so much, Mariano, I appreciate it. All right, on to today's show. As I mentioned at the end of last week's show, I have hundreds and hundreds of guests in the lair this week. That's because they are all in the brain of one very talented actor, one who has given voice to many of our favorite animated characters, a bunch of them straight out of the pages of comic books. Check this out. I'm going to be right back. You're going to hear from the man of a thousand voices, Mr. Michael Bell. You might recognize the face, but you definitely know the voice. Michael Bell has been a mainstay on TV and movie screens through seven decades now. Starting on screen with small roles in 50s television, Michael soon became a go-to actor, appearing in some of the biggest shows of all time. The Monkees, Get Smart, Mission Impossible, MASH, The Rockford Files, Three's Company, and Charlie's Angels, where he played the ex-husband of Kate Jackson's angel, Sabrina Duncan. During that time, Michael discovered that the world of voiceovers and animation could keep a talented artist quite busy in Hollywood. In 1972, just 3 years after his on-screen appearance in TV's Mission Impossible, Michael found himself in an animated takeoff on the show, this time starring a group of dogs and cats. It was the NBC Saturday morning cartoon, Houndcats.
Anytime there's a rumble out west, who do you call? You call the best, 'cause everyone knows it's simple as that. The best in the west is the Houndcats.
Is the coast clear?
All clear, Stud.
Well, just in case someone comes by, let's all act natural and nonchalant.
Michael's voiceover work is nothing short of spectacular and all-encompassing. Check this out. He's done voice work on Speed Buggy, Scooby-Doo, Tarzan and the Super 7, Thundar, the Smurfs, G.I. Joe, Voltron, Transformers, Gargoyles, Rugrats, the list goes on and on and on. And if you get hungry, you want a sandwich, then you probably will recognize him as the voice in your refrigerator.
Hello, how are you?
I am fine.
Who is he?
He is Parquet.
Pare.
Excuse me, but I think you are Parquet.
Pare.
He is not Parquet?
I think so.
Pare.
Taste.
Smooth.
Creamy. He's butter.
Parquet.
Ah, it's okay.
He's nice.
Sarai.
Parquet margarine from Kraft. The flavor says
butter.
Michael has also brought to life some of our favorite superheroes and supervillains. On the shows Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and The Incredible Hulk, you heard Michael as both the evil Dr. Octopus and tortured scientist Bruce Banner. He's played Superman's greatest foe, Lex Luthor, and on the Saturday morning classic Super Friends, he played Batman's nemesis, the Riddler, as well as Zan, one half of the extraterrestrial super duo, the Wonder Twins. Now, this team was interesting, to say the least. Fist bumping activated their superpowers. Jaina could turn into any animal she wanted to. That's a pretty cool superpower. And her brother Zan, he could change into water.
Wonder Twin powers, activate! Shape out an eagle!
Form of water!
And Zan often had to be carried around in a bucket by Space Monkey Gleek, also voiced by Michael. Michael's superheroic voiceover powers got to take center stage in 1979 as he bounced into the starring role in the Plastic Man comedy adventure show.
From under the pages of DC Comics comes the world's newest and greatest superhero, Plastic Man. He can spring, he can stretch, he can fly, he can bounce, he can change his shape, and he can even dance.
This is a beautiful day for the beach, players.
Nice of the chief to give us a day off, wasn't it?
What is that?
I don't know, but I'm gonna find out.
Created by writer-artist Jack Cole, Plastic Man first appeared in Police Comics issue number 1, way back in 1941. He was previously voiced in an episode of Super Friends by none other than Aquaman himself, Norman Alden, but this time around, Michael Bell got to take Plaz and the gang on adventure after super adventure. Well, it was not that long ago that I introduced my guest Doug Jones as the modern-day Lon Chaney, the man of a thousand faces. I'm going to introduce today's guest, I hope I'm not overreaching here, as the modern-day Mel Blanc, the man of a thousand voices, and I am certainly hoping we're going to hear a few of those today. Okay, kids, let's pretend it's Saturday morning as we kick back with Michael Bell. Michael, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Hey, listen, this is a pleasure. Thanks so much. This is fun.
Oh, I'm a kid again. I love this. I love doing the show. I get to be a kid, like, all the time. This is so cool. You've basically voiced my childhood, so no pressure. Sorry, you know, no pressure at all. Okay. Man, I'm telling you, where do I even start? You have been a voice in my head since childhood. Why don't we go back to your childhood? What were the things that you were watching? What were the things that a young Michael Bell, that little tyke, what was he checking out? Like Looney Tunes, Mel Blanc, what was going on there?
Well, we used to wait by the cabin to make sure that we weren't being attacked by Indians, as I recall. And let me see. God. Way back then, I'm not sure.
Like, how far am I going back here?
I know what he was. I used to read the books I read when I was a kid, the comic books, for me. Because, you know, don't forget, I remember the advent of television. Shows you how old I am. I remember the first television set in the block. Was it Captain Marvel and Billy Batson?
Movie serials? The movie serials with Tom Tyler?
These are comic books.
Oh, you're the comic books you're reading. Okay. Oh, so you're a Captain Marvel fan.
I was a Captain Marvel fan and a Plastic Man fan. So I don't recall, to be perfectly honest, and of course, you know, Superman and Batman, but I don't recall watching cartoons on television at all. I think I was someone that I'm not sure what was on at the time. In those days, it was whatever cartoons were on television were from another group, another era. I mean, I'd go to the movies, and I would see, obviously in the films, we would see Heckle and Jekyll and other characters, but not, I don't remember anything of what I do now, any characters I do now.
Okay, was that later on that came in, or was it like, was it always like, I'm going to be an actor, and then it's like, oh, maybe I'll transition to voice acting?
Well, no, I always wanted to be an actor since I was 5 years old. I mean, I'm one of the people, you know, when people come to me, because I teach voice animation, I'm a voice animation teacher as well, and they say, well, I really want to do this, and I decided I would do this, and most of them are adults. Rarely has anybody come to me and say, I've wanted to be an actor since I was a little kid. That has been my dream, and I eventually, when I went in the Army and came out and eventually got into... I was studying all that period of time prior to that, and I think I may have done a film before I went in the Army. I'm sort of vague in my mind, but it was a small independent film. But I'd not done any voiceovers at all.
Okay.
That happened when I came out of the Army, and I'd already been under contract to Universal Studios. I'd done 100 or so shows, episodic television, and then decided to get into voiceovers because I got a chance to play different characters, which I didn't do when I was starring on television. I was stuck with the same character.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say Man of a Thousand Voices. I mean, have you ever, we'll get into those, but what was it when you were five? What was it that you went like, okay, that's it. That's, I got to do this.
Oh, you're going to laugh. When I was 5 years old, I just knew I wanted to act. I'd probably sing, dance, or whatever it was. But the films I watched when I was a kid were the adventure films. And the films that I remember being locked into were Tarzan with Johnny Weissmuller. Oh, I always wanted to be boy and ride in a ride in the jungle or something, or be in the jungle with chimps or something.
Well, that's weird, because my era is the 70s, obviously, so there was, you know, the Ron Ely version, and you had the same thing. Was it Jai, I think? So it was the same thing. Yeah, you could always just, like, imagine you're the kid with Tarzan. That would be so cool.
Yeah, I thought Johnny Weissmuller was it. I didn't, and to be in the jungle with animals, which I always loved, was it. I mean, I thought that's what being an actor was going to be. It's only as I got older that I, you know, studied and got into different interests in terms of actors and actresses. But that's what I wanted, and so and of course comic books were a relief for me as well, of the adventure in comic books. You know, I'm a kid from Brooklyn, and there wasn't a hell of a lot of adventure there.
What was it about the comic books that you like? I mean, I know what appealed to me, but what appealed to you in the world of comic books that you're like, oh, I got to jump into this world and see what's in here?
As a kid, I loved the concept of heroes. I loved the idea with Captain Marvel because he was Billy Batson. So he was this kid that turned into this superhero, and I guess that I always found that somewhat magical for me anyway. And you know, it was nice to be able to get an opportunity to do that later on in life. I never got to do it on screen, as I recall. I was usually a heavy, usually the bad guy, sometimes a CIA operator, sometimes an attorney once or twice.
Sometimes the ex-husband of a Charlie's Angel.
Yeah, I was what's her name, Kate Jackson's husband.
How are you the ex-husband of a Charlie's Angel? Why would you divorce Kate Jackson?
I guess you didn't know her.
There's a dark side to our Charlie's Angel that we didn't know.
There's a dark side to everything. You know, what you see ain't what you got. You know, I won't even get into it because some of the people are still living. I won't even tell you my experiences for Three's Company.
Okay, you led me right into that. That's exactly what I wanted to ask you. Before I get into the voice acting, I want to talk about the live action acting. There's a couple of series that are near and dear to my heart. You had two different roles on one of my favorite shows of all time, Three's Company. The first being Rama Magish.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I love this episode. You are so smarmy in this.
Yeah, that's probably closer to my true nature. And then the other one was that wonderful character, kind of like All That Jazz.
The episode was called Some of That Jazz.
Some of That Jazz. That I really enjoyed doing because I've been working out so specifically. And I always thought, well, if I get cast in something, I really want to look good. And they finally called me and said, well, we need an actor who's built well and, you know, who's a hunk, but at the same time is also a dancer. So I had been studying dancing as well. So I said, great, that's me. Get me into those tights. I'm it.
You're ripped in this thing. I'm surprised they didn't cast you as a superhero at some point. Like, you're totally ripped in this.
Yeah, I was ripped. I worked very, very hard to get ripped. In fact, I had never seen it since the first time it aired. And then somebody, I think it was a fan, sent me a clip. Not the film, but like a photograph. And, of course, now it's on the internet where I've got Janet and she's sort of doing something on the bottom of my leg and I'm sort of pulling her up or something. I said, whoa, look at that. That is so cool. I had no idea it looked like that. Not really.
It's on your IMDb page. What was it like to work with John Ritter? One of the legends of comedy, especially a physically comedic actor.
Yeah, John was delightful, really delightful actor, very giving. We played a lot, we joked a lot. He was really fun to work with, and he was a good guy, really good guy. And I really was sorry when he went, but he was really, really. When you work with actors. Sometimes actors are not gracious of both sexes, and it's just about them. John was not like that. It was really a pleasure to work with him.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that because he's one of my favorites. So it's always nice to know that he comes across like he is in real life. So that's kind of cool. And I put him up there with Chaplin, Keaton, those guys. I mean, as far as physical comedy goes, he nailed it every time. So
great physical comedy, wonderful physical comedy, absolutely.
Yeah, he was amazing. And you were also on Star Trek, a bunch of Star Treks, in fact. The pilot for Star Trek The Next Generation, Encounter at Farpoint. What did you think when you were cast in that? And it's, okay, we're going to reboot the franchise. We're going to, not necessarily reboot, but we're going to relaunch the franchise on television again. Because there was a lot of skepticism at the time when they were doing that.
Well, those are the shows that I like to watch. I mean, Star Trek was one of my early Star Trek, which and it was a great fun thing because I always loved science fiction and fantasy. I always loved fantasy and horror and science fiction, always. And so to get an opportunity to do that, my friend Corey Allen, who I had studied with as an actor and had put me in a couple of plays, was casting, and he said he'd like to have me come in and read for it. And I did, and they originally had me read for the role of Q, and there was somebody else in his office in the dressing office at the time, and this gentleman said, would you read Garoppolo Zorn? And I hadn't prepared for it, actually, and I said, well, sure. So I looked at it, and I read for it. I used an older voice because it sounded like an older guy, and he said, no, just use your own voice, and I did. And he said, yeah, I really like that. And he said, do you remember me? Remember working for me? And I said, and this wasn't Corey. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are. And he said, my name is Gene Roddenberry. And of course, if I was wearing Depends, I would have filled them. And I said, oh, wow, okay, now I got to tell you, I remember working for you. I'm sorry. And he said, yes, you did a pilot for me called And Then Came Bronson with Michael Parks. Yes, he said, and you remember you remember what happened? I said, yes, I do. You really want to talk about it? He said, and he laughed. He said, no, that was interesting. And
what happened? Yeah,
well, I was a guest star on the show, and I played a motorcyclist, as I was at that time. I had really curly hair, and I'm not sure if I had a beard at the time. I don't recall, but I was always playing hippies and motorcyclists. And he and Bonnie Bedelia, of course, was the guest star, and I was the male guest star. And I'm supposed to, it's supposed to be some sort of race we were doing up a hill on a motorcycle or something like that. And I think Chris Columbus was directing. And I went up in the scene and walked over and started the scene. And then Mike Parks got really nasty. He started to play around and joke around and improvise. And I wasn't sure he remembered his lines. And then she improvised with him. And they were playing really very nasty characters, which wasn't the scene particularly. And so I went along with it for a short period of time, and then to finally I stopped. I said, okay, look, this is really crap. If you don't know the lines, let me know. I said, I'm glad to work with you. I said, but, I'm not interested in playing a game like this. I got stuff to do. I got a home to go to after this is over.
And you're the guest star on the show that week.
Yeah, I said, when you remember your lines, get back to me. And I walked away. And the other guys who are playing tough guys as well, like Angels, motorcyclists, whatever, Charlie's Angels, no, Hell's Angels.
Hell's Angels, yeah, totally different than Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, Hell's Angels said to me, "Oh man, did you just do that?" And I said, "Yeah." And these are mostly the extras, you know, the performing extras. And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Oh man." So Chris Columbus came over and said, "Well, what the hell? What's wrong? What's going on?" And Michael Park said, "Well, he can't remember his lines." And I turned on him. And I said, "What? I can't what? Who the?" And I let it go. Like, I don't know where I got that from. I don't know what made me think that somebody wasn't going to say, "You're never going to work in this business again." Because I figured, screw it. You can't do that to me. So
you said everything we've never heard you say on Saturday morning TV, right?
I sat right into him, and he just sort of wandered away.
Oh,
and I didn't like him anyway. I thought he was a nasty piece of work. But I got to tell you, years later, saw Mike Parks in Tarantino's film, Kill Bill. And I didn't recognize him, but damn, was he good. He became a marvelous character actor. But as a young leading man, I found him to be very cocky and difficult to get along with. But boy, he became a great character actor.
But that's probably most people in Hollywood, though, especially in the 70s, when you think. I mean, that's kind of like, that's probably more the exception than the norm, I would think.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people got catapulted into stuff because they were so good looking, and that was the period of time where everybody was pretty. I mean, not that they're not now. I mean, Lord knows. I mean, you can do a porno and become a successful person, but in those days, it basically they were very, very pretty actors and actresses, and they got their jobs because they were pretty.
Yeah.
So I was not by any stretch pretty. I was a character actor. I did one job after another. I've worked with a lot of people like that. So.
Oh, you're in everything. I mean, that's the thing. Like we know your voice, but for people when they see you, it's like, oh, there's that guy. I know him.
Yeah.
He's you see, and you're in like every episode too. So, well, hey, are you ready to talk about some of this voiceover work?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, here's the question. Every creative person listening to this podcast wants to know, how do you get into the voiceover business? And please don't say practice, practice, practice. We've heard that one before.
No, I usually talk about that if you want to get into adult films.
That's all other podcast.
Let's see.
Well, you run a seminar, you said, right? You're like teaching.
Well, I teach voice animation. I teach
okay.
to professional actors.
Okay.
And I also teach twice a year to Japanese acting students that come in from Osaka and Tokyo and all these different areas. I teach about 190 at a time voice anime. Rather than just practice, which all the guys did, because all the guys that I've worked with over the years, it's when you say get into it, prepare for it, I think, is the answer. Getting into it is something else, entirely different. Getting into it is a lot of luck. There's a lot of luck involved. Preparing for it is, I tell people, take acting lessons. You know, I really do. You got to take acting lessons. You got to study. You got to know what it is you're doing. You have to know how to create those characters. I always use the terminology, plagiarize, don't shagerize. That's why God made your eyes, so plagiarize. if you see something that sounds good, or whether it's a family member or a friend or somebody you've seen on screen or you hear, make it yours and listen to it and make it yours. Dialects are involved to change your voice. Can you do those things? It's just working at it. I talk to a lot of fans. I'm going to be going on a convention soon, and I know the fans will approach me. The people do come over to me and they say to me, "I'd like to get in the business." And they say, "Well, then do it. Then go for it. But don't waste your bullets if you don't have a target. You have to have done something. You have to work at it. You can't just say, 'I could do this voice. This is the voice of someone who I.'" No, that's not it. You have to have a basis. It has to have a reality to it. Even the silliest cartoon, the childish cartoon, has to have some sort of reality to it. When you're doing video games, you really have to know what you're doing. And when you're doing adventure series, you really have to know what you're doing. And now, of course, it's mocap. There's the motion capture. You really have to be an actor to do that.
Yeah, well, we talked to Alan Richson, who did Raphael from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and so yeah, you're going. Yeah, it's both. You get the best of both worlds now. When you're doing that, you can actually act in it. I'm telling you what. Here's a nerd fantasy for me, and you know our fantasies are a little bit different.
Are you sure you can talk about? Are you sure you can talk about this?
I think I can talk about this here.
I'm sure everybody's ready for this.
Okay. I would personally love to grab a table at a local pub, sit down with you and Frank Welker, and just listen to you guys do like a voice off. Battle the voices. I'm guessing your paths have probably crossed on a case. Well, it was like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Plastic Man, I think. So are you guys friends? Do you know each other? Is it just, ships that pass in the night?
Snorks, G.I. Joe, Transformers. We've done a lot of stuff. I adore Frank. He's just one of the sweetest. I mean, you hear about sweet, nice guys. We used to joke about Frank. My friend, Joni Gerber, who's long since passed, who was a marvelous voice person. We used to joke. She said, is he not one of the best? I said, he really is. I go, well, I got this feeling that there's a sack of teenage parts in his backyard. Someday they're going to dig him up and find them. He's just too nice. He's got to be a serial killer. He's too damn nice. And he is. He's a good guy. He's a sweet guy and enormously talented. And he's not self-effacing particularly, but he appreciates the talented people around him. Now, we don't see each other now because I'm not out there as much. I've got a reoccurring part in Rescue Box, which is in this series, and Frank is not particularly on it, but he's doing lots of stuff, and he's also doing Garfield. So we don't see each other at all, but we communicate. We email each other, and we talk every now and then.
You guys should do like a road show, just, you know, like do a touring show, Hope and Crosby, like the modern age or something like that. That would be, I'd pay to go see that. That would be fun.
Years ago, I mean, I do a lot of, I work for a lot of charities, animal charities, quite a few animal charities, and to bring funds into them. And some long time ago, I was doing a charity for Last Chance for Animals, which is a local charity, which is a really important charity. And I put on a show, and I used Frank in the show. He was so sweet. And I said, what do you want to do? And he said, why don't you just put me in a situation, and as you talk, I will do the characters, and I will do the machine, or whatever it is. And I go, okay. And I kind of had an idea of what his retinue was, because we had done the Smurfs for so long. So I knew him well. And so I started to tell a story. And as I told the story, he went into the room, and he turned on his projector, and he did a projector. And he watched the ducks, the 106 ducks that he had just photographed. He did 106 ducks. And I just went on and on and on. Everybody was awed in the audience. Oh. And I was making it up as I went along.
Is this total improv?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. Classic.
See, you guys got to do this. I'm telling you what. Look, if you take the idea, run with it. I would pay money to see this. That would be a great show.
Just look, you can't get Frank. And you can't get Frank to travel outside of his safety perimeter, other than if you told him that there was a major golf game going on, then he'd hop in his plane and he'd be there. That I know.
Well, trick him. They pretend like you're on a golf tour,
and say, surprise, it's not a golf tour. We're doing voices here.
Yeah, here's a theater full of people. Go do your voices. That'd be great. Absolutely. 1973, your first voice role, was that Stutz, leader of the Houndcats?
I think so.
Okay.
Were you doing your homework? Yeah, I think that may be correct. I can't recall. I remember doing that for the Patty Freeling. Yeah, they wanted me to do Jack Benny kind of sound.
Okay.
And I didn't know how to. At that point, I really wasn't adept. So I tried Phil Silvers or something. Maybe they wanted to do Phil Silvers. So I wound up doing a Get Smart character, Don Adams, and then got it. And everybody was up for it. And then I was out driving around one day, and I ran into someone who I knew through another friend, a marvelous actor, writer, Albert Brooks. And Albert said, how's it going? We talked. I said, good. How's it going with you? Because we had known each other. And he said, what happened with the Houndcats? Did you know got that? And I said, yeah, I got it. He said, you got it? And I said, yeah. He said, oh, that's crazy. You do Phil Silvers? I said, no. He said, well, what did you do? I said, Don Adams. He said, well, they wanted Phil Silvers. I said, no, but I don't do Phil Silvers. So I did Don Adams. He said, I do Phil Silvers. I did a great Phil Silvers. I said, but you didn't get it, did you?
You didn't do Don Adams. Missed it by that much.
That's right, exactly. When in doubt, do Don Adams. What did I know? I didn't know anything. I was an actor, and I'm just playing around having a wonderful time doing voices. So, and then, of course, he went on to extraordinary fame, well-deserved, an enormous talent. But I can still walk up and say, oh, yeah, well, I got him, Jack.
You got that on him. Oh, and man, look at the cast, too. You got to work with the great Dawes Butler, Joe Besser, Artie Johnson. Yeah. What did you learn from these guys, especially Dawes Butler? I mean, because he's another one of these guys that just did everything.
Oh, Dawes is unbelievable. Unbelievable. What a talent. An enormous talent. Really great talent. What I tell people when I teach is you listen. If you listen, you will get something from them. And you listen to Dawes Butler's characters, Yogi Bear and the other characters. They're very similar to the stuff that Jackie Gleason played on television in The Honeymooners. You listen to with the character in The Honeymoons. He goes, hey, 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 you know, oh, what do you do? You know, and that's very similar to Yogi and Boo Boo. Then there's a couple of other characters that people had, that they didn't mean to imitate, but it just worked for the character. Your Flintstones, that's also Honeymooners. That's Jackie Gleason.
Straight out of Honeymooners.
Absolutely, and that's where a lot of that stuff comes from. Everybody did it, and it worked. Nobody said, don't do that. It worked.
Your theory is proving true over the... Joe Besser?
Yeah, Joe Besser. He used to do the Milton Berle Show. He was fabulous. What a fabulous, sweet man with a history of vaudeville behind him, a history. He used to regale us with stories, and he was just dear, sweet, lovely man.
Oh, Abbott Costello, everything. I mean, yeah, there's a history of Hollywood there.
Yeah, I don't want to. I think you're wrong. That was so, what a wonderful character. And that was stolen from him, too, by the way. Do you remember Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
Who played the lion? Who played the friendly lion? The Cowardly Lion.
Oh, the Cowardly Lion was, my wife's going to kill me for this. It's her favorite movie. It was, there's a poster like literally 10 feet from me and I can't see the name.
Wolf Vaudevillian.
Bert Lahr.
Bert Lahr, exactly. And Joe said to me, and you know who used to stand in the wings when he was a little kid while I was doing my vaudeville act? Bert Lahr.
Nice.
And years later, could I watch The Wizard of Oz? And there was my character. And that was his character.
That's your theory, is just listen and whatever works, and then adapt it for what you need.
Plagiarize, don't plagiarize. It's like
a major. Oh, man. Well, hey, before we get to the superhero stuff, which is, you know, my cup of tea here, give me just a little bit of Parquet.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. I was just watching the other day. I went to YouTube, and somebody said,
you got to give me a little bit of this. I grew up with this.
I used to go, butter. Butter. Parquet. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Okay, now I can move on to Super Friends. That is amazing. Yeah, for our listeners, yes, you are the voice of Parquet. Super Friends, Zan and Gleek. You also played the Riddler, so you got to do the heroes, you got to do the villains.
Yeah.
A lot going on there. Thoughts when you realized you were going to be playing a superhero?
You know, superheroes generally... playing myself, I mean, using my voice with a certain amount of different kind of energy, you know. But that's pretty much for the superheroes. Playing a bad guy was, for the most part, more fun because you got to really twist it and really got to fool around and got to really dig deep, as deep as you can for a cartoon character. And where Gleek was concerned, the director said, well, I just want you to do something, you know, goofy, glib, whatever it is. But, and I came up with something. And they said, okay, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's good. Frank wasn't in the picture at that time. Frank had come a little bit later. And I know, of course, that years later when I was doing other stuff and listening to Frank Duolo's wonderful characters. Had Frank been around at that time, Frank more than likely would have done Gleek.
Yeah, he did a lot of, well, I mean, even in Raiders of the Lost Ark, he did like the monkey voice, you know, the voice of the monkey and a bunch of different things like that.
Yeah, well, Frank was offered a film called Space to the Moon, from Earth to the Moon, or Space something, whatever the heck it was. And it was about the first chimp in space. And he had to play all these chimps, and he declined. And then it came to me, and I did it. And then I called him, and I said, I called him a couple of days later, I said, I know why you declined it. Because you knew the kind of work was going to go into it, right, Frank? Am I right? And he was laughing. I lost my voice for about a week.
Wow, he knew. He knew going into it.
Oh, yeah. Race to Space, I think it was called. And I wound up doing all the chimps.
Oh, wow. Well, our favorite one is Gleek. How did you come up with the voice of Gleek? And you can't leave us hanging. You got to give us a little bit.
I think Gordon Hunt just said he doesn't say anything. Gordon was the director. I believe it was Gordon. Not even Scott. But anyway, Gordon said he doesn't say anything. So just that, I don't want to fix it. And I said, are you guys going to play with this and do something with it in post? He said, I don't know. It sounds okay. I said, okay, fine. Use it. You sound like someone choking to death on vegetable soup. But okay. Sounds good to me.
It's nuts. Yeah. Look, you say Gleek, you hear that voice immediately. It's great. Look, well, however you channeled it, it's perfect. I got to ask you, though, what's up with Zan's powers? Like, he can only do, like, a form of water, but it's like for the first part, like, all he's doing is turning into a bucket of water. You had to have been like, come on, man, a bucket of water?
That's exactly what it was. And I turned to Liberty Williams, and she was all these things, birds and animals. I said, why do I get water and she got animals? I don't get it. I could have done so much. I said, and then all I could do is, as you say, you know, an ice unicycle. And finally, I got to the point where I got so lazy. You know, and the line was, powers, activate. And then I would say, form of... And there would have to be someone. I go, form of snot. And they go, cut. Mike, what is that? Well, I never did snot before. Yeah, but it's not snot. Can you do the right thing? Okay, fine. And then they go, form of pee. And they go, come on, William, let's get on with the show. Because it got to the point where I thought I covered all the water there was to cover.
That's one of them. Yeah, I didn't even think of that one. I'm like form of a tsunami. Like, just wipe everybody out.
Form of a tsunami. There you go. I could have done that.
Take them out.
I wouldn't even know what that was at that time.
Probably not. No, you were too busy doing the bucket of water.
Yeah, bucket of water. Bucket of water? You know, what about, see, the next thing he should have had was Dandruff Man. And then he'd shoot his head, he'd have a huge wall of dandruff, and it would escape.
A cup of tepid tea.
Yeah, a cup of tepid tea in case you were being attacked by Englishmen.
Oh, man. The Riddler. Did you, any influence of Frank Gorshin? Did you kind of look at that, or did you just kind of like drive into it yourself?
I thought at that time he was the quintessential Riddler. Absolutely. And not to take anything away from Jim Carrey, I thought he was brilliant. But at that time, I thought Gorshin really nailed it. And I'm not trying to take anything away from it. I just made his voice a little higher, as I recall. He was, you know, somewhere on this area. You know, in that area, so that I made him thin and sort of scrawny and skeletal-like, and use that voice. Don't forget, I'm not sure how much of a talent pool they had to pull from. They had sort of a group, and they were very careful when they brought somebody new in, because I'm not sure they felt that they could give them the three voices, because you got to play three characters, and they paid you only for one. So you wound up doing the two other characters. So they saved a lot of money on two other actors by having actors that could do more than one character. And that's part of the... to this day, that's pretty much the same, except you get a small percentage now for the third voice, or for the second voice, but a third voice. But for the bottom line, it's really not much. And so you're still bringing in three actors, one actor to play three. So you had to have a lot of... You had to have a coterie of actors that could do all those different characters. And I'm not sure there are a lot of actors around that could, at that point, do that. There weren't many that I know of.
Yeah. Well, staying in the world of superheroes, we've got you jumped from the DC universe to the Marvel universe. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, featuring the great Frank Welker, and the Incredible Hulk. You are Bruce Banner, and kind of a family affair. Your wife Victoria, she was She-Hulk, correct?
Yes, she was. And it's very funny because I played it for the first time. I just went to YouTube and found it, and I said to her the other day, and I said I was watching, and she said, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "You sounded like Monroe before you turned into the Hulk." And she sounded like Marilyn Monroe. She was, "What do we do now?" Wow, that is so funny. Yeah, Don Jurowicz was our director.
Okay, so she did both. So she was both roles.
She was both roles. She played the Hulk, and she played the Hulkus, or the She-Hulk, and she played the character that turns into She-Hulk.
Yeah, okay. So, it's with you. The Hulk was Bob Holt, correct?
Yes, and there's a funny story that Bob is long gone, and an extraordinary, again, a wonderful talent, and funny man with an amazingly sick mind. We were doing, I think we had done maybe one show, I think we started to one show, and we just got underway, and I went, as Bruce Banner, and I said, "Oh, wait, something hit me, or I drank something," and I don't know what's happening, and suddenly he would take over, and he had a quarter of a page of growling and screaming and yelling and Hulk, no, all that stuff. And then he finished, and then when he was reduced to Banner again, I go, "Oh, where am I?" Oh, that was really a terrible thing. Or something. And then he'd go, "Wait a minute." He stopped and he said, "Is that all you do?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "You're going, ow, I hurt my elbow," and I'm going, "Wah!" And we're getting the same money. Yeah. And everybody fell on the floor. And said, "Okay, hold on. Get my agent on the phone. I'm going, blah, and I'm leaving a lung on the window." And you're going, "Oh, wow. And you're the star, and we get the same money."
He's doing all the heavy lifting.
He did all the heavy lifting.
Literally, he's doing
it. My elbow. It's really funny.
That's great. It's a great series. You get to play Doc Ock on Spider-Man. You're in the DC universe, in the Marvel universe. You bounce back literally to the DC universe with Plastic Man. Your favorite comic book character, or one of your favorite comic book characters?
One of my favorites. I think to some degree, other than being invisible as a kid, wanting to be invisible so I could see people naked. I think what I really wanted to be Plastic Man, because you could do anything. You could stretch and go anywhere and be a thing and fly and wherever. You could do just about everything. And I thought, what a marvelous character. I think I'd be doing a movie of that. I'm kind of curious. Have they even considered doing a film of that?
They haven't said anything yet. I mean, the closest we've gotten, obviously, is a Fantastic Four with Reed Richards. But, look, everything's a superhero now. So. Well, now, what did you enjoy about the comic books? So he could do anything. Was that it? That just like he could become a table and like hide
he
out?
Could do, anything but a bucket of water. he could be a jet plane. He could be an umbrella. He could be a bridge, and he could stretch and slip under a door. I mean, I just thought it was an amazing character. I think it was a marvelous character, Plastic Man. I really did.
Yeah.
I love reading Plastic Man. I was a big Plastic Man fan. So to getting the opportunity to play Plastic Man, what a gift that was.
When I spoke to Mark Evanier, who was the writer of the show, he mentioned that he's a comic book writer as well. So it's like the series deviated from the comic books. It was more, I think, kid friendly. I mean, you had Baby Plaz, and you know, you had all these things.
Too.
Yeah,
I did Baby Plaz also.
So I don't know that he was that thrilled with the aspect coming from the comic book world. Your thoughts on the series itself that kind of deviates from the comic books? You like it? You didn't like it? Thoughts?
You know, I didn't give it much thought, to be honest with you. As an actor, you just, and at that point in my career, there wasn't, I think I didn't have a day without work. And like the actors of the period that used to do radio, that would run from one radio program to another, from RKO off to NBC to CBS, because they were in demand, I worked all the time. So I would do Plastic Man, and the next day I'd go out and do something else, and the next day I'd be called for something else, and I would be back in the studio for something else for another show. And It was constant. I didn't have much time to mull it over and say, excuse me, my character wouldn't do this. You know, this just wasn't going to happen.
In issue 54, he didn't do this.
Yeah, exactly. That would be goofy. And I it was up to them. They wrote it. I did it. It was a mutual match.
Were you doing anything in studio physically? Because this is a very physical character. Were you doing anything physically in studio to try to get a different tone?
You don't have to actually, unless of course if you're running, if you're climbing a mountain as a character, if you're falling off a cliff, or if you're springing someplace, you physically have to, vocally do that. But you obviously can't leave the mic. There's no way of doing anything really physical that's going to affect the character itself. You have to manifest that sound like you're doing something physical. But there's nothing really physical that you have to do in terms of voice mic.
How did you find the character of Plastic Man then? How did you channel that? Or did it come pretty easy?
You know, they said, what have you got? And I said, oh, I don't know. But should we try this? And I tried something, and they said, yeah, we like that. And they said, good, that's good. And he went away, and I said, gee, I get to do Get Smart again. So I used Don Adams again. You know, made him like that. Oh, well, that's a good idea, isn't it? You know, same kind of meter, same kind of tone. I said, look, if they're not on to me now, they'll never be on to me. I can do this rest of my life.
They haven't figured it out yet. Oh, that's great. So there's a little bit of Don Adams in Plastic Man.
Yeah, a little bit of Don's. Yeah, a little bit of that. And years later, I wound up guest starring on the show. Because I didn't say that to him. But, yeah.
Oh, man. Well, and that's the thing, too, is that the character, I think, within the animated series, he's, like, really snarky, and there's a much more, I think, sense of humor than, like, something like Xan or, you know, like on Speed Buggy or something like that. I think there's a much, like, a weirder sense of humor that kind of gets smart sense of humor to it.
Well, yeah, Plastic Man was strictly New York. Xan is the Midwest.
Oh, okay. So you like, even as approaching a character, you kind of like give them a little bit of a backstory as you're going in?
In my head, yeah. If it's in the writing, I'm going to employ the most I possibly can. If he's ingenuous, I'm ingenuous. If he's naive, I'm naive. If he's obviously sarcastic, I'm going to use the sarcasm as long as they write it like that. Sure, I'm absolutely there.
Oh, very cool. And unfortunately for you, they didn't also use the live-action Plastic Man as the voice. Did they? That was it Taylor Marks?
I don't even remember that. Wow, I don't even remember that.
Oh, okay, well, hey, probably good. I mean, fortunately for you, they didn't use his voice. They used him for the live-action.
Yeah, now that I know later on, a couple of years ago, I think they did Plastic Man again, the animated version, and they used, oh, golly.
You have Tom Kenny?
Tom Kinney, right. Tom Kinney got it. And I was a little bit taken aback. I thought, well, hey, why didn't you just come over and ask me? You know, I always tell people, you know, the assumption is, well, maybe we'll do something new. But why, if you already have your fan base, just give the guy a call? You know, maybe you think, because I'm older, I'm going to shout like this and say, yeah, I can do Plastic Man. I remember doing that. I don't, you know, I think it's pretty much what I sounded like then, but give me a shot at it and give me a try. As I tell people, you know, don't think of me as this old guy. My butt has dropped, but my voice is pretty much the same.
That's a strange thing, because Shannon Farnan with a Cartoon Network, they had her come back as Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And she sounds exactly the same. She pulled off a great hair here, you know, a few episodes back, so.
Absolutely sounds exactly the same. They're doing the movie, The Smurfs. Not the one they just did, the last couple they did. They're doing an animated version. And I was approached, I was in a restaurant and wearing my Smurf jacket. And somebody came over and said, excuse me, where'd you get that jacket? And I said, well, I got it as a guest from the production company. And this is a reproduction because my wife and daughter made a new one for me. And he said, well, why? Did you write it? I said, no, I was the voice of Handy, Lazy, and Grouchy. And they went, oh, my God. And he went to the other table. He said, he's Handy. And you this huge brouhaha, and they're excited. And he said, my name is, and he introduced him. He said, I'm animating the new film. I said, it's going to be animated? He said, animated? He said, yeah. I said, whoa, they're doing a new animated Smurfs? He said, yeah. I said, great. So I immediately came home, told my agent. And she said, okay. And then she approached them. No one had approached me. She approached them, and they sent me a script for the role of Grouchy. And I read it, and then they said, no, no, we want him to sound different. We don't want him to sound like Grouchy. And I said, well, then I don't know what to do with it. I really don't. You know, it's either my voice or Grouchy. Well, how different? They said, we need him to sound younger. So I did my voice with a little bit of kind of a crouch, you know, a little, because he's obviously going to have something going on. Even a young guy, he's going to have that little kind of creepy thing that's going to be the beginning of a grouch, gravelly sound. No, wouldn't buy it. So that was it. So I wound up auditioning for my own life.
That's a funny thing, because even way back in the day, Shannon Farnan, she had to like re-audition for Wonder Woman and didn't get the role. She'd been playing it for like 10 years. Oh, it's a crazy business.
That's the business. And you can't take it personally. Yeah. They have something they have in mind, and I said, look, they're going to get a celebrity. Fine. If not, they're going to get a young actor. That's okay, too. I did Duke and G.I. Joe for so long, and then not too terribly long ago, played Duke as an older guy with E.J. Ward, who was Scarlett, playing my wife. And the wonderful Jason Marsden played young Duke. So I played myself as an older Duke, and he played young Duke. And that's the way it goes. And it was fine. It was a good show. It was cool.
You're still doing stuff, and you're doing some voice direction now?
Yeah, I directed my third season of The LeBrons, LeBrons, from, you know, LeBron James.
Yeah.
Basketball player. He has his own animated show, so... they called me into directed, so I've been doing that for 3 years. It's a webisode.
How does your acting background impact how you approach directing other actors then? So you're a little, like you could probably, like you get it.
I think personally, I'm not sure what their feelings are. I think it does a great deal. I think as a teacher, I have to take them through the acting channel to get to a character, not just imitate me particularly. But to find out where the life of that character is. You can get the voice, you can do all of that, you can get the voice, you read the dialogue, but it's got to be rooted. And as an actor, I can show them how that's done and how to get there. I don't have to do it all the time, and I can show them how it's done, how to get there. And yes, you do take a physical stance when you're behind the mic. As an actor, it helps tremendously to take a physical stance. So if you're a character that's really strong, very tough, etc., you put both feet on the ground and you're really solid. And if it's a character that's wizened and old, I bend my body a bit and do something with my hands or whatever attitude I have, I physically try to do that behind the mic, and it helps me as an actor. And I feel like I could help other actors do that. In fact, I just finished a video, a teaching video, that's it's going to be on my website as soon as I finish my website.
Perfect segue. That's what I wanted to ask you about. How can we find out more about you? Website, Facebook, Twitter? Where are you?
Well, I'm on the website. It's Voice of Michael Bell or Michael Bell Voices or Voices of Michael Bell, one of those. And it's just new, and it's just gone up, and I pretty soon will have a video of my class, teaching a class for about over a half-hour video to teach new people that want to learn how to... approach voices and how to approach characters and build a character.
Well, perfect. And we will put the links in the show notes, how people can find out about you. They can click on it and find all about how to do this. My goodness, Michael, for anyone who loves animated series, Saturday morning TV, video games, seeing our favorite comic book characters come to life, we have you to thank for a lot of that. So thank you for so many years of entertainment, and thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Hey, this was my pleasure. Thanks for the lot, Joe.
Always a fun time catching up with those legendary talents that many of us grew up with. And so great to see them and hear them still today providing us with laughs and entertainment. That's pretty awesome. Michael recently appeared on Transformers Rescue Bots as High Tide. And you can check out his voiceover acting masterclass at his website. It is michaelbellvoices.com. That's it there, michaelbellvoices.com. And as you just heard, he has a lot of voices that Michael Bell does. Most of them are firmly implanted in my noggin. thank goodness they're there. I always hear them, and so cool to be able to talk to them and catch up on some of those voices as well. You can follow Michael on Twitter at MichaelBellVO, and you can catch up with him on Facebook. I'm going to put all those links up in the show notes at my website, comicbookcentral.net. Michael, thank you so much for hanging out with me in the lair today and treating us to so many decades of voice work, characters, animation work. We loved reminiscing with you. Folks, you might have heard me mention Warner Archive on the show a few times. I think I may have mentioned it. Guess what? They've got the Super Friends over there as well. All the episodes. You can check out Michael Bell as Zan, Gleek, those goofy superpowers, the Riddler, and also my guest from episode 43 of Comic Book Central, Shannon Farden. She was Wonder Woman on the Super Friends. She's there as well. Get the DVDs. Relive Saturday morning in the 1970s. It's wbshop.com. You can also get the entire Plastic Man series on Amazon. Talk about binge watching. There's all the Super Friends DVDs. There's Speed Buggy out there. Plastic Man. Binge listen to Michael Bell. There is a lot of voices in his head, from his head to his brain, his mouth to our ears. It's all out there to hear. Go have fun. Get those DVDs. And I want to hear from you folks as well. Time to hit the mailbag. Our virtual mailman, Willie Lumpkin, he delivered an email from friend of the show, artist Lynn Workman, who has also been binge listening to Comic Book Central while working. Lynn writes in, "Totally geeked out while listening to the Eldon Henson, Foggy Nelson episode today. I'm drawing a couple of Star Wars sketch cards for a friend. I'm going to do some more sketch covers while I'm off this weekend. I've got to get more done for the Memphis Comic Expo that's coming up. Listened to the Michael Rosenbaum interview yesterday while cleaning up the Batcave. Really enjoyed it. I was at the prom he crashed in Metropolis, Illinois. The guy is a complete nut. I'm getting a few days off to head up to Metropolis again. Really looking forward to running around, taking some pictures, hanging out with friends. I'll be helping my buddy Tim Brown set up for the Fan Film Festival and donating some stuff to the Save the Massac Theater auction. I'm about to fire up the Kathy Lee Crosby episode next. I picked up her Wonder Woman movie, as well as Man-Thing, the Matt Salinger Captain America movie, Reb Brown's Captain America movies, Sam Jones' Spirit, and the anniversary Mad Max with original Australian version this past month, and I've been watching them in the Batcave. Type at you later. P.S. Stan Lee for your first episode? Are you kidding me? Nice one. Hey, thanks for writing in again, Lynn. Always good to hear from you. Have a blast in Memphis and Metropolis, Illinois. I really need to get back to Metropolis soon. I love it there, especially for the Superman celebration. You've got the Superman Museum there. You got everybody dressed up. There's little dogs running around, cats dressed up in super cat. Was it Streaky? There's Crypto. There's all of them up there. That's a fun time. I've got to get back there. And thank you so much for checking out those past episodes of Comic Book Central. That's right. Eldon, Kathy Lee, Captain's America, Matt Salinger, and Reb Brown, Sam Jones, they've all spent time in the lair. Have fun listening to those. I hope you enjoy them as much as I did recording them. And yes, I kicked off Comic Book Central a little while back with none other than Stan the Man Lee. So, yeah, the bar was set pretty high right from the start. I hope I've been able to maintain that level of quality each episode. So, hey, thanks for writing in. Let me know if I've been able to do that. Let me know if you're enjoying the show, folks. Write in like Lynn. Let me know what you think. It's joe@comicbookcentral.net. You can also leave a review in iTunes. Many of you have been doing that. I appreciate that. Help get the word out about the show. That is always appreciated. Thanks so much to those who have subscribed. You've been letting me know that, and I appreciate that. We're having some fun here in the lair. Thanks, as always, for joining us each and every week. We're having some fun on Facebook and Twitter, too, posting some cool videos, pictures, links, a bunch of stuff, things I'm getting from people we haven't seen in decades. Check them out, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. And you can hashtag share the lair on Twitter @comicbookctrl. All right, kids, like Plastic Man, I'm going to bounce out of here for a few days, but I shall return. Same comic book time, same comic book website, iTunes channel. I don't know. Wherever you get the show, I'm going to be back, because next week on Comic Book Central, she's currently sinking her teeth into the role of a werewolf on the TV series Bitten, and comic book fans love the fact that she soared through the sky as Kara Zor-El, Supergirl on Smallville. She is one terrific actress. The stunning Laura Vandervoort will be here in 1 week. Until then, have a fantastic Plastic Man Week. Keep reading those comics. Thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of the respective holders.
Riddler, who are you expecting, King Tut?
Looks like you'll have to deal with more than you expected, Riddler.
Wrong, Superman! It's the Super Friends who are going to have to deal with the unexpected.